Welcome to the first alumni shiur of KYHS. We are starting the second parak of Rosh Hashanah. Now, being that we're starting the second parak of Rosh Hashanah, so that means that there's certain assumptions in terms of what you know regarding Kiddush HaChodesh. The first two parakim of the Masechta are dedicated almost exclusively to the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Every month, Beis Din will establish which day is Rosh Chodesh. Now, you probably don't see this nowadays. You do not see this nowadays simply because we don't do Kiddush HaChodesh anymore. The calendar is set and fixed, and it's been so for the last 1,700 years approximately. So, unfortunately, without a Beis Din, without a Sanhedrin, without a Beis HaMikdash, so we don't do Kiddush HaChodesh. In the good old days, however, there was a mitzvah in the Torah, to be Mekadesh al pi ha-ri'iya. That means that witnesses would see the new moon, and they would sanctify the new moon based on the testimony of two witnesses. The first parak, which we obviously skipped, dealt in detail regarding these two witnesses are coming to the Beis Din in order to testify that they saw the new moon. If you happen not to have a good base knowledge in terms of how the new moon operates and the molad, so it happens to be that's all in the first perek, and it's a really technical discussion, it's a really good discussion, but it happens to be that you don't need to know that for now, at least for the second perek, so it's okay. Meaning, all the technical stuff is in the first perek, and perhaps there's a good reason why we skip the first perek and we move right to the second perek. Okay, be that as it may, just a couple of minutes on the most basic ideas that we need to know. You'd have a pair of Edom who would be coming to the Beis Din to testify that they saw the new moon. At the beginning of every new month, every new lunar month, so you're going to be seeing a sliver of the new moon setting on the western horizon. You'll just see a sliver of it. And it's only just going to be for an hour, maybe a little bit more. Edom are going to be seeing that new sliver, going to come to Beis Din, and they're going to say that they saw the new moon. And then Beis Din is going to be Mekadesh HaChodesh, they will sanctify the new month. They will establish that day to be the first day of the month. It gets much more technical than that, because a month could either be 29 days or 30 days. Beis Din has an option of making either 30 or 31 days Rosh Chodesh. And again, that is all important, but for now, at least just to get into the second perek, we don't need to know that information right now, but that is just basic information to know. Okay, and what we are doing now is we're starting the second perek of Rosh Hashanah, and we start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah over here is now going to be talking about character witnesses. Now, this is going to be a really interesting Mishnah, it's a really interesting sugya, because what the Mishnah is introducing us is to the idea that normally when you have two witnesses who come to Beis Din and say, hi, here we are, so Beis Din says, great, no problem at all. What kind of chazakah, what kind of presumption do we make regarding the witnesses? They're kosher, of course. Generally speaking, somebody comes into shul and says, I'm a Jew. You said, fine, that's great. Somebody says, I'm a kosher aide. Again, everyone has a cheskas kashrus, right? Innocent until proven guilty. It's not an American concept. It's really what is the, it's a cornerstone of halacha. So generally, everyone has a cheskas kashrus. And so Beis Din doesn't need any character witnesses, any character, any background check on any witnesses who come to the Beis Din. However, as we're going to see together in the Mishnah, because of a group, a sectarian group of really just not good people who really try to manipulate the entire system, so Beis Din had no choice, but basically they had to do security check on the witnesses who came. Now, the security check is very simple. You just simply had another pair of witnesses who came along and said that these first set of witnesses are, in fact, they check out. They're good. They're Edom Ksherim. Now, of course, with every system, you know we could manipulate the system, and you know that what we could do is we can just simply have a second pair being also not good. Obviously, every system is not foolproof, but this is nevertheless a system that was used in terms of ensuring that we have kosher edim. Okay. With that stated, so let's take a look at the first Mishnah together. The Mishnah is on the bottom of Chav Beis Amud Aleph. The Mishnah starts off, Im Einam Makirin Oso. So let's say we don't know these witnesses, meaning we have no history whatsoever with these Edom who come in. So Meshachanimo Acher Laido. So the Mishnah says, so fine, so what we're going to do is we're going to send in Acher. Now the word Acher literally translates as another. Simple pshat in the Mishnah is that means that we send one other person to serve as character witnesses. That's going to be a little bit difficult because if the third person, let's call him the third person right now, is testifying about the first two people, ostensibly you need a second pair of witnesses. So we're going to come back to that. The Gemara is going to really sit on that point. Now the Mishnah tells us that originally what happened was that we accepted Edom from everybody. Meaning I go back to the default position which I already outlined, and that is that if somebody comes in, we generally assume he's a good person. He's a kosher aide. That would have been the original position. And in fact, the Mishnah says that was the original position. Misha kilkulu abaitusim, however, along comes the baitusim. And they were makalkal, they destroyed. Details to follow. So he's kinnish lo yehe makablam ela menamakirim. So therefore, we only accept the testimony from people that we recognize. Or if they were validated. If we have character witnesses who validate that these are in fact good witnesses, we'll accept them as well. Ad kan divrei Mishnah. So the Mishnah now just gave us just a snippet of information regarding this idea that once upon a time we accepted everybody, and then along comes the baitusim. Okay, so in a moment I'm gonna introduce the baitusim in much more detail, and everybody will get a much better idea of who the baitusim were and what exactly they did. My acher. So but we start with the Gemara right away, and the Gemara's question is very simple. We have one other character witness who is testifying about the original two witnesses. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? So the Gemara says, chad. Oh, so it must be that we're talking about one witness. And the Gemara asks the question, as now we turn to the topic of Bezam and Bez, Bechad mi Mehemen. What? You're going to believe one witness, even though he's only serving as a character witness, but still, that's Eidus. Va'atanya, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Maisa Shabahu ve'edavimo, Lahayid alav. And the Braisa says that him and in his Eidav are coming in order to testify. So I'm Rav Papa, Echad, my Echad, Zug Echad. Okay, so Rav Papa says, fine. So Echad over here means it's a pair. So the Gemara says, Hachi, nami mistab, but the Gemara says, that makes sense. The Elo Tema Hachi, because let's not suggest that. Emena Makir Moso, my Oso. Now, the wording of the Mishnah is, if we don't recognize him. Now, even though it's B'lashon Yachid, what do you think that means? Ile Moso Chad, you think that one, that means one, V'chad mi Mehemen. We don't believe one witness. Mishpach Sivbe. Regarding Eidus HaChodesh, the Torah says Mishpat. Now, it's not the Torah. It happens to be a pasuk in Tehillim. But still, the point is that when we are being made on Rosh Chodesh, on Kiddush HaChodesh, so you need Mishpat. It has to be like a regular judicial process. You need two witnesses. So Elamai Oso, Oso Azug. So the word Oso, even though it's B'lashon Yachid, it means him, meaning a pair. So Achinami, my Acher, Zug Acher. So the same thing also, that when we have the character witnesses, it means another pair. Now the Gemara goes in the other direction. What do you mean we're not going to believe one? V'atanya, the Gemara has another braisa. Maisa b'Rebbe Nehurai shahalach eitzol ha'ed la'ha'id alav b'Shabbos b'Usha. So the braisa says that Rabbi Nehurai served as a character witness, and he went to testify about the witnesses that they weren't that good. Now again, the simple pshat in the braisa is that it's just one person. It was Rabbi Nehurai by himself. So the Amre. Rabbi Nehurai Saada Achrina Havabadei. So the Gemara's answer is no. Really, Rabbi Nehurai had somebody that came along with him. He didn't go by himself as one character witness, but there were in fact two. Vaha Delo Chashiv Le Mishum Kvodos Rabbi Nehurai. And so the Gemara says, really, even though in the Brisa no mention is made of the other person who went with Rabbi Nehurai, but the truth of the matter is that there was really somebody else there. It just happens to be that once you had Rabbi Nehurai there, It's not respectful to mention who the other person is. Fine. Rav Ashi Amar, Rabbi Nehurai Sa'ad Achrina Hava Be'usha. Really, the Gemara gives another answer. And that is that Rabbi Nehurai know that there was already a character witness waiting in Usha. And he knew that he was going in as a second character witness. Fine. V'azal Rabbi Nehurai Lev Suruf V'vadei Yihachi Maila Meimra. So the Gemara says, that's great. But the Brisa is not giving us a Chiddush. Because now all the Brisa is simply saying is that if you have two character witnesses, that's good. Okay, but I need the Braisa to tell me that. So Ma'od Tama, the Gemara says, here's a Chiddush. So Misfeik Olam Mechalin Shabbos. Remember, Rabbi Nehurai went in on Shabbos. Now, this goes back to the first Perek, but it's important to clarify this point, and that is Kiddush HaChodesh is a mitzvah, and it's done even on Shabbos. And even if it means, these are the last Mishnayos in the first Perek, which we skipped. Even if it means that the Edom are going to have to be Mechal or Shabbos in order to go to Beis Din, in order to testify about the new moon, they do it, because the Torah says that you're Mekarsh HaChodesh Bizmano. At the right time. And now, pile on that another Chiddush, and that is, not only are the witnesses going to be Mechal Shabbos, but the character witnesses are also going to be Mechal Shabbos as well. And now we're going to tack on another Chiddush on top of that. And even though Reb Nehurai is one of two character witnesses, and even though he thinks there's another character witness in Usha, he's not sure, so now we're talking about he's going to violate Shabbos, and he's not even sure if it's going to be effective or worthwhile. Still, Kamash Malan. So now we have a Chiddush. That's exactly the point of the Braisa. is that you're mechal Shabbos to be mekadosh haChodesh, even if it means that you are the witnesses, even if it means you're the character witnesses, even if it means that you may not even need, they may not need your testimony, or they can't use their testimony. Still, you're mechal Shabbos. Good. Now we have a chiddush. Let's finish up to the Gemara. Ki asa ula amar kachu ala yarcha b'marava. Ula comes in and he gives the following edus. He says, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, they were Mekadosh HaChodesh. Now, just to understand this clearly, Ula is not serving as the one who is testifying to the new moon. He's just telling, he's informing the people of Bavel that in Eretz Yisrael, they were Mekadosh HaChodesh on this and this date. Again, there are 2 days that you could be Mekadosh HaChodesh, either on day 30 or 31 of the previous month. So he just informed everybody when to do so. So Amrav Kahana lo mi bayi Ula degavar rabahu de mehemen. Now, Rav Kahana says, I want to make sure that everyone understands this point very well. We're not just describing Ula, who's Gavar Abba. He's a great person. And we're believing him because he's a great person. No, that's not true. Even if it was just one person, just a regular person, you or me, so we would believe that person. My time, Mom. Now, why? In other words, we're talking about testifying and only one witness. So what the Gemara is going to clarify is that this is not testifying. Kol milsa da'avida le'iglulei lo mishakra be'inshe. If something is going to become public information, so then the person who happens to be there and giving that information first, he's not going to lie, because he knows that that information is coming anyway, and he knows that if he's going to lie, all he's going to do is just be proven to be a liar. And so this is a basic idea that comes out throughout Shas, and that it's milsa de avida lugluy. If something is going to become known, and everyone knows it's going to be known, so you can even believe one witness on this issue. It happens to be, this is also a huge concept that comes out throughout Shas. It happens to be that this was the other area that I wanted to, that I was considering going into. But in the meantime, however, you'll see the area that I pick on for this evening. Tanya Amihachi, the Gemara quotes the Brice as well. Ba'echa besofa olam, somebody comes in from the end of the world. Ba'amar kishu basin, esachodesh ne'eman. And he says that Basin was Mekadosh HaChodesh on this date, so he's going to be believed. Because it's not testimony, it's not edus, but rather what it is just simply, it's Gilui Milsa. He's just informing people, he just happens to be there first. But he knows the information is also going to come from other sources, and he knows that there's no way he's going to get away with lying. And here we go now. This Gemara is fantastic. Tanur Rabban, the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Ma kilkulu kilkulu abaitusim. Now, what exactly do we mean kilkulu? We mean that the baitusim were the ones who corrupted the system. Pam achas, and the Gemara now tells the following story. Let me give just a quick point of background over here so that we all appreciate. The baitusim are a sectarian group. Now, there are a lot of sectarian groups that exist in the time of Bait Sheni, and the most popular one is the tzedukim. If you heard of any group that is off the derech, so the tzedukim is probably the group that you heard of. The baitusim, same story. The Baitusim are another group of Jewish people. They rejected Torah Shabbat Peh. They only accepted Torah Shabbat Chsav. And, okay, so this is like the earliest forms of Christianity, if you will. It's obviously, historically, it comes earlier. But basically, it's a group of people who bought into the Old Testament, but that's it. Torah Shabbat Peh, all the Mesorah that comes along with it, they reject it. Now, if I can just give one other point of introduction over here, just so you understand what's happening. So they were motivated to manipulate the calendar. What was their motivation? So really, it's this time of year. Well, it's a little bit late, but right now we're between Pesach and Shavuos. And the Baitusim, if they could. Now, you understand, you're manipulating a month. You can only manipulate it by one day, meaning you only have really one day to manipulate, at least in one month. So admittedly, there's only so much they could do. But if given the opportunity, they're going to have Pesach come out on Shabbos. Now, obviously, the month is when the month comes out. How can you manipulate that? Well, again, because based in it can be Mekadosh HaChodesh either on the 30th or on the 31st day. And if it happens to be that, let's say, for example, Shabbos comes out on the 30th day and there's no new moon yet, so the Baitusim would come into Beis Din and they would lie and they say they saw the new moon, so that the first day of Nisan will come out on a Shabbos, the first day of Pesach will come out on a Shabbos. What is so exciting for them that the first day of Pesach comes out on a Shabbos? So, the Gemara is going to say it really briefly, but I'm going to explain it right now. That means now that we start Sfiras HaOmer on Sunday. If Sfiras HaOmer starts on Sunday, so that what does that mean regarding Shavuos? Shavuos comes out on a Sunday, right? Shavuos is 50 days later. Shavuos will always be the same day as the second day of Pesach, right? This past year. This year, Pesach came out on the first day of Pesach was on a Thursday. Shavuot this year is coming out on a Friday. That's how it always works out. So they want Shavuot to come out on a Sunday. So that's why if they can, they're going to manipulate the calendar so that the first day of Pesach will come out on a Shabbos. First day of Nisan will come out on a Shabbos. First day of Pesach will come out on a Shabbos. Now, pray tell, what's so exciting? Why do the Baitusim care so much about that? Because they read the Torah. They don't accept the Torah Shabbat Peh. The Torah says, when are you going to be celebrating Shavuos? When are we going to celebrate Shavuos? Mimacharos to Shabbos. The Torah says, the day after Shabbos. Now, we have a Torah Shabbat Peh. We know that that means that we start counting the Omer the day after the first day of Pesach. Shabbos over there means the first day of Pesach. That's our Kabbalah. But they don't accept that. They reject that. So therefore, they think that we're starting, that really Shavuos should be observed on a Sunday. So therefore, go back in the calendar, manipulate the calendar, so that Pesach comes out on a Shabbos, we start counting the Omer on Sunday, and Shavuos now comes out on a Sunday. That is their motivation. Good. It took a while, but it's important to understand that just to get through the Gemara. Now, that means that they're going to lie regarding when is the new month, if it's going to work to their benefit. And so the Gemara says, Pam achas bikshu baitusim la'atos es chachamim. So the Baitusim now basically wanted to send in witnesses to testify. What did they do? They hired two witnesses to come and to lie. Good. So they paid off two witnesses. And they gave each one of them 200 zuz, 400 zuz in total. Now the Gemara says parenthetically, one of them actually was sympathetic to the Baitusim. One of them was sympathetic to us, the ones who still kept the Torah Shabbat Peh. Now, hey, they do so v'yatsa shalanu. I'm sorry. V'echa mishalem. Shalahem, hey, do so. V'yatsa. So the one that was sympathetic to the Baitusim, so he went in and he lied and he testified regarding a moon that he saw, that he claimed he saw, he never saw it. He just did it because he got paid off. Now, shalanu amrulo, now the person who was sympathetic to us went in and said the following. Emor, ketzad ra'isa es halavana. So they said, okay, describe the new moon. And by the way, all the Mishnayos and the Gemaras that we skipped in the first parak went into detail in terms of what the new moon is going to look like. Okay, so if anyone wants more details, you can ask me afterwards, but good. What does it look like? So Amar Lahem, so this person who was paid off to testify and really was sympathetic to the Perushim, so he now puts together some story. Ole Hayisi B'Mala Dumim. So I went to the town of Mala Dumim. V'Reisi Shuhu Ravutz Bein Beis Alayim. And I saw the new moon situated between two rocks. Rosho Dome Le'egol. So its head looked like a calf. And Aznav Domem Le'gedi. And the ears looked like a goat. And Karnav Domos Le'tzvi. And the horns looked like that of a deer. V'Znavo Munechas Lo Bein Yarkasav. And its tail was stuck between the legs. V'Tzatzi Bo. And I looked at it. V'Nir Tati V'Nifati La'Chorai. And I jumped back. Now, what is he talking about? So over here, this kind of description, it must have been code that he was basically feeding to the Beis Din. I don't understand the code, to be honest with you. And I'm sure if you look back in the Marashah, you will see he will try to explain exactly what the coded message is. Okay, so in other words, they passed a code between the two of them. And if you don't believe me, and basically now he stops speaking in code and now he speaks very straightforward. And if you don't believe me, he takes out the 200 zuz that it was given to him, and he says, and I got paid off in order to testify. Oh, Amr lo, me, he's gekucha lakach. So they said, who paid you off? So Amr lahem, shamati shebikshu, baitusim, latos es chachamim. So he says, look, I overheard that baitusim wanted to pay two people off to testify. Amarti elech ani, ve'odia lahem, shema yavo b'nei adam, she'inam uganim, ve'yitu es chachamim. So he said, look, I took the money, but here's what I wanted to do. I wanted to smoke them out. I knew somebody else who was not scrupulous would take the money and lie. So I took the money, knowing full well that I wasn't going to lie. And I wanted to tell you, I wanted to tip you guys off that the Baitusim are looking to corrupt the entire monthly system. Amr lo, masayim zuz nesunim lach b'matana. So they said to him, you know what, the 200 zuz? So that's yours. V'hasorchecha yimtach al ha'amud. And the people who hired you, so they're going to, we're going to make sure that they get Malkus. But Osa Shan, at that point in time, and now the Gemara says, now we know the rest of the story. This is the historical point where from this point going forward, we only accepted Eidos HaChodesh from people who either already had a background check or had character witnesses that came along with them. Ad kan divrei ha-Gemara. That is the end of the section of the Gemara that we're going to be covering over the course of this evening. And with that stated, so let's just now spend a couple of minutes together going over what I found to be a really interesting topic. And that is, let's go to the end of the story regarding this aide who took the money in order that he would lie. He didn't lie, and the basin says, you get to keep the money. Now, the basin says, you get to keep the money. Now, let's think about this all together. They get to keep the money. This guy gets to keep the money. This guy was only given the money to perform a particular task. And he didn't perform the particular task. In fact, he said it very clearly. I was given the money to lie. And he says, and I'm not going to lie. I'm just not going to do it. Good. So the guy is a wonderful guy. Basin's conclusion, however, is very unusual. Basin says, and you know what? You can keep the money. It's not really his money. So what gives Basin the authority and the right to go ahead and tell him to keep the money? So already at this point in time, you should guess the answer because you can look at the title page of the Mar Makamos and you can already see what the answer is going to be. But let's take a look at Rashi over here where Rashi writes the following. Masayim Zuz and Sunna Lach B'Matana. It is the Rashi just two before the end of the Sugya. So Rashi writes, V'tei Rosho La'akvan. I'm sorry, V'tei Rosho La'akvan. You can hold, you have the permission to hold back the money. V'afa pishalo hishamta tanai shocha l'sor charecha. And even though he did not complete the stipulation, the condition in terms of what allows him to keep the money, nevertheless, Rashi writes, yesh reshus le'beisin liknos mamon v'lasoso hefker. Basin has the right and the ability. It is within the jurisdiction of Beis Din where they can say, that money no longer belongs to you. They can disavow anybody of their money. Kid Amrina B'Yavamos, and Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Yavamos. Minayin Shehefker Beis Din Hefker. How do I know this idea of Hefker Beis Din Hefker? Shenemer V'chol Asher Yavo L'Shosh Asayamim Yecharam Kol Rechusho. He quotes the Gemara in Yavamos, quoting a pasuk in Ezra. Okay, so we're going to spend just a couple minutes together speaking about this idea of Hefker Beis Din Hefker. And I'm going to hopefully make this one particular Rashi a lot more exciting. The idea is that Beis Din has this kind of power and authority. It's tremendous. Beis Din can take somebody's money, and as a knas, as a fine, so Beis Din can remove your ownership over that money. And this is the idea of Hefker Beis Din Hefker. It's within the right of Beis Din to do so. If you look at the Mar Makoma sheet, now here, I'd love to go through everything inside. So far, you saw that we did the Gemara together. We just learned the Rashi together. So the truth of the matter is, I would love to spend a lot of time in the Gemara and Gittin. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in the Gemara and Gittin, but the Gemara and Gittin is one of the main sources. Yavamos is the other, where the Gemara speaks about this idea of Hefker based in Hefker. Now here, if I could just highlight the following, the Gemara says, how do I know this idea that Basin has this kind of right and authority? Where in the Torah does it say it? So the truth of the matter is that the Gemara actually has two sources for this idea. And you can see as I'm now highlighting the Gemara in Gittin, so Amar Rav Yitzchak, Minayin Shehefker Beis Din Hefker, how do I know this idea that Beis Din has this kind of right and authority? Shenemar, V'chol Asher, I'll skip, V'chol Asher Lo Yavol L'Shoshos Yamim, Ka'atzas Asarim V'Azikenim Yacharam Kol Rechusho V'Hu Yibadal Mikal Agola. Let me give a little background. This is a pasuk from Sefer Ezra. Ezra, they come back in to Eretz Yisrael after the first Chorban, the first Galus. So we're talking now about the beginning of Bayis Sheni, and Ezra is one of the last Nevi'im that lives at that time. Now, who comes back with Ezra to rebuild Eretz Yisrael, to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? Quite frankly, a very small portion of the Jewish people. The Navi over there describes 42,000 approximately who came back with Ezra. Most of the Jews were comfortable, stayed in Bavel. I'm sure we can all relate. I know I can. And didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. Fine. So, and the people who went back to Eretz Yisrael with Ezra, they weren't the firmest of people. Now, everyone here knows me. I'm not the one to judge. The Navi describes how they came in with non-Jewish wives. Meaning, so we're talking about intermarriage. Okay, but those were the kinds of Jews who went back. So Ezra really tried to clean up Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, try to clean up the Jews who came back with them. It is obviously it's noteworthy that they left Bavel to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and so their Zionism was strong, but their Yiddishkeit needed a little bit of improvement. So Ezra said the following. Now Ezra was a Navi. He was also the head. He was the Nasi. He was the head of the Jewish people. He was let's call him also the head of the Beis Din. And he says, and this is what the Gemara is quoting now, anyone who does not come here, he writes, meaning I want to see every man who's intermarried, I want to see them here in my office. And if you don't come, so he sends out a serious subpoena, and he writes, and if you don't come, yecharam kol rechusho, v'hu yibadal mikal agola. What's going to happen is that any possessions that they have, any land that they have, any property that they have, I'm going to declare that property ownerless. I will remove their ownership from their property. Okay, that's a pasuk in Ezra. So that's one source that that tells us hefker based in hefker. And then the Gemara goes on, Rabbi Eleazar omer mihacha, Ela nachlos asher nachlu Elazar hakohen v'Yoshua benun v'Yoshe avos. So this is in Sefer Yoshua. And the pasuk in Yoshua describes how, based on the decisions that are made by Yoshua and Elazar HaKohen, so the land is going to be divided and apportioned amongst the Jewish people. Now, the pasuk is a little bit strange. Rashi HaAvos. That's a strange pasuk. It's a strange language. Vechima inyan Rashi Meitzel Avos. The Gemara asked the question, what did the two have to do one with the other? The Rashim are the heads. Avos, what does it have to do with anything? Lomer lo, ma avos manchilim es benem kol ma sheyirtzu, af Rashim manchilim ha'am kol ma sheyirtzu. So he says, look, we know that a father has the ability to take his property and transfer that property over to his child. Now, that's called Yerusha. So we know that the father has the ability to do so. Now, under normal circumstances, that means the father has to die in order for that to happen. But nevertheless, the father has that ability to make that kind of transfer. So too, the Rashim, meaning the heads of the Beis Din, also have that kind of executive power, where they could take somebody's property, take it away from somebody, and give it to somebody else. Okay. The Gemara in Gittin that we just went through has two sources for this idea of Hefker based in Hefker. And anytime you see two sources of Hefker based in Hefker, so you have to ask the question, why two sources? What's wrong with the first source? What's the difference between the first source and the second source? So this is something that is popularly discussed amongst many contemporary Achronim. Early Achronim discuss this as well. I quote the Amshel Shlomo, an early Achron. He says it very clearly, and that is the following. There is going to be a subtle but significant difference between the two sources of Hefker based in Hefker. And the Yamshel Shlomo writes like this. Many write like this. I happen to find the Yamshel Shlomo. And he says like this. Hefker based in Hefker is definitely a koach based in. It is certainly a power and a force that based in has. Now, what exactly is the scope of Hefker based in Hefker? You can say it of one of two ways. Either number one, Hefker based in Hefker allows Beis Din, gives Beis Din the right to take your property and declare you no longer to be the owner. It is considered a siluk. It just simply is a removal of you from that property. But that's it. Hefker Beis Din Hefker can't do anything more than that. All it can just simply do is separate you and the property and declare you no longer to be the owner. In fact, the words are literal. Hefker, meaning Hefker means that you no longer the owner. That's one possibility in terms of what Hefker Beis Din Hefker can do. But then there's a second possibility, and this obviously is much stronger and wider in scope. And that is, Hefker Beis Din Hefker can say that what Beis Din can do is that Beis Din can not only take the property away from you, but they can also be makne, they can actually give it to somebody else. Now that is obviously stronger. That tells us that Beis Din can not only create a siluk, but can also positively hand it over to somebody else. And so many of the Achronim point out, you can see in the Yamshel Shlomo right here, that this in fact is the very difference between the two drushas of Hefker based in Hefker. According to Rabbi Yitzchak, where does he learn it from? He learns it from Sefer Ezra. What did Ezra say? Anyone who doesn't come here to Yerushalayim within 3 days, yecharam. What does yecharam mean? Yecharam means you're no longer the owner of that property. That's siluk. That's just simply a removal. But if you go to the second drasha, the drasha of Rav Elazar, that's much more. The drasha of Rav Elazar is more than just siluk. The drasha of Rav Elazar is, it's hakna'a. That Beis Din can take the property away from you and in fact, even give it to somebody else. Obviously a much wider scope. And so what the Amoraim are doing over here are not just giving us sources for Hefker Beis Din Hefker, but they're really debating what exactly is going to be the scope of Hefker Beis Din Hefker. How far-reaching is this idea of Hefker Beis Din Hefker? Now let's go back to our Rashi. Let's make this Rashi exciting. Rashi writes over here that, look, this person already was given the money by these people. And Rashi says, that now Beis Din says that you know what you could do? You can hold on to the money. Now Rashi says you can hold on to the money. So if you take a look at Rashi, we're going to reread the Rashi. V'tehei Rashai Lakvan. You can keep the money. And even though you didn't fulfill your condition, yesh reshus lebeisdin liknos mamon v'lasoso hefker. Here's what Beisdin can do. They can declare the money to be hefker. Oh. So if you're following the Rashi really carefully, so Rashi over here is really limiting the scope of hefker, Beisdin, hefker. The only thing Beisdin can do is just simply remove this money from their ownership. And then look at the pasuk that Rashi quotes. Now Rashi had a choice over here because now we know we saw the Gemara in Gittin. Rashi could have chosen from two drushes and from two psukim, kedamrin and biyavamos. Now we happen to go through the Gemara in Gittin, but it's the same discussion in Yavamos and the same two sources in Yavamos. Minay shefker based in hefker shenemar v'chol asher lo yavo l'shoshes yamim yecharam kol rechusho. Rashi quotes the drusha of Rabbi Yitzchak, not the drusha of Rabbi Lazar. Rashi over here is clearly indicating that the scope of Hefker based in Hefker is only limited to separating property from somebody's ownership, but they cannot create a Hakna. Now, it happens to be that over here, the money is already being held by somebody else. Great. So, based in here didn't need to perform a Hakna. They didn't need to transfer it over to him because he's already holding the money. What based in did is just simply Hefkeris. They just simply were misalik the money from somebody else. So, probably... Okay, I didn't see anyone say this, but probably that is why Rashi quotes that particular drasha and not the other drasha, because Rashi understood, like the later Rishonim, like many of the Achronim, that there is really a debate in terms of the scope of Hefker, Beis Din, Hefker, and he sides, and I'm not saying he's paskening, but here clearly he's siding with the position of Rabbi Yitzchak. That it's just a question of Silik, it just is a question of Beis Din can only remove ownership, but cannot actually transfer it. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of today. So let's just quickly recap. Oh, perfect. 31 minutes. Okay, let's quickly recap. What we discussed so far is the first sugya in the second paragraph of Rosh Hashanah. We talked about the idea that in order to testify regarding the new moon, so you need character witnesses. Or you already had a background check. Otherwise, you can't testify. Now, this goes against the regular cheskes kashrus. Normally, we assume that a person has a chazakah of being kasher. But over here, we no longer accept that. And why? Because of an incident that occurred with the Baitusim. As we went through the Gemara, the things that we accomplished in the Gemara is, number one, we just clarified that for the character background check, you need two witnesses. The Mishnah doesn't read like that. The Gemara says that's how we're going to read the Mishnah. And the Gemara proves the point that we needed a character check. The Gemara also described how, if you are sending information that already has been established elsewhere, if you're just informing, you just got the information first, so then you're going to be believed even if you're one witness. But that's just simply because kol milsa davidu legluye. Anything that is going to become known, so we believe even one person. And it doesn't have to be a gavarab, it doesn't have to be a great person like Ula. It could simply be anybody. And finally, we covered in the Gemara the background in terms of what happened. Why is it that that you need a background check in order to testify? And we went through the story regarding the Baitusim. And finally, we covered the Rashi on the Gemara. And I made a suggestion this evening in terms of Rashi had a choice of two drushas to work with, and Rashi opted with the first drusha, not the second drusha, and I suggested in terms of why that should be.